Power outages due to an overwhelmed electrical grid is becoming more common across the country, particularly in states that have phased out coal-fired power plants. But this just isn't an issue of concern for other states either. A few years ago, Winter Storm Elliott led to rolling blackouts across the Commonwealth of Kentucky. Hi, I'm Richard Nelson, the host of The Commonwealth Matters. Now, this rolling blackout in Kentucky was because electricity could not generate the supply needed for Kentuckians. So, do we take our electricity reliability for granted? What does the future hold for electricity costs? And how does the EPA's recent rule regarding carbon dioxide emissions affect future electrical reliability in the Commonwealth? Joining us to talk further is Caitlin Bunning, Principal for Cornerstone Government Affairs, where she specializes in both state and federal government relations. She's also the executive director of Dependable Power First Kentucky, a coalition of businesses and local leaders bound by shared concern for the future of Kentucky's energy grid. Caitlin, welcome to the Commonwealth Matters.
Thanks for having me today, Richard.
Hey, let's start with this. You know, for years, as I've listened to candidates and political leaders talk about Kentucky's competitive edge, I'd often hear that it was our low cost of electricity. We have an abundance of coal, particularly in the eastern part of the state and the western part of the state. And electricity was that competitive edge. It was both good for consumers, but it was also good for businesses. And here's the question I want to start out with. Do we still have that competitive edge?
I think that's exactly right. We have always prided ourselves as Kentuckians on the ability to have an abundant supply of affordable and reliable electricity. I think that's why you see the industry and the manufacturing that we've historically had across the Commonwealth. You know, I spent a lot of time talking to economic development groups for that very reason. You know, I don't think we can take that for granted anymore. I do think that Kentucky still does have an abundance of natural resources, and we do still have the ability to provide low-cost, affordable, and reliable energy. But because of an increased pressure coming down from D.C., whether that be from legislation that's been enacted or really more acutely the regulations coming out of this administration and previous administrations like it, that's becoming increasingly difficult. And so that burden is passed down on Kentucky and on Kentuckians. We're seeing increased prices, and we're also, as you mentioned, seeing a decrease in reliability. And that's a real concern. And that's a lot of what we focus on at Dependable Power First.
Caitlin, there has been a trend at the national level for, I would say, probably a decade to phase out fossil fuel-fired power plants, primarily coal. And we've seen it here in Kentucky. I'm from far west Kentucky, where in Muhlenberg County, there was a large coal-fired plant that was shut down just a couple years ago. And we're seeing this across the state. We're seeing it across the country. And I think the question is this sustainable? And that's why we're talking right now. Can the nation and can Kentucky generate reliable and affordable electricity while those power plants are being shut down? And I'm going to go to this. I'm going to pivot over to an EPA regulation they just issued back in May. Nearly a little over 1,000-page rule to control CO2 emissions for existing power plants, and primarily those that use coal or oil to generate electricity. What kind of impact is this going to have, this large EPA rule that, and I think we can argue, by the way, that it's a good thing to care for the environment. It's a good thing to care about air quality. But I'll start with this. Are they looking at the big picture when it comes to this?
I think not. I mean, I think that this is really, you know, driving an ideological point rather than a practical point. You mentioned we all want clean water and clean air. I have a almost 4-year-old and a 2-year-old. I want them to live in a clean environment. I want to live in a clean environment. And I think it's important to note that we at Dependable Power First believe firmly that we should have a true all of the above energy strategy. We have members that have invested heavily in renewable energy sources. And I think that we truly believe that that is a really important part of our future. And we make technological advancements towards that future every day. I think over the past several years, you'll see that energy consumption has actually gone down because we've become more efficient. Our plants are becoming cleaner all the time with technological advancements. At the same time, the EPA has put an unrealistic timeline on all of our heads. I think, you know, they want to force us to move towards renewables, which are wonderful, but they do not have the reliability that a coal plant or even a natural gas plant has. And so you can't just trade one for the other at this point in time. Until we get better battery storage and until we have the ability to dispatch renewable energy sources at all times of the year, at all times of the day, even when the sun's not shining or the wind's not blowing, you know, you can't just trade one for the other. And so we've seen this increased pressure on either retiring coal-fired plants or converting them to natural gas, which is great, but you can't over-rely on any one source. I think we would argue that you need a healthy mix of all of the above. And most importantly, we need to maintain that baseload generation until we get to a point where we can trade 1 megawatt of solar for 1 megawatt of coal. We're just not there yet.
We're not. So I want to go back to the EPA rule. And there's three options for coal-fired plants that they have. If they do not meet the CO2 emissions, which they're decreasing allowable emissions, their first choice is if they cannot meet them, they have to retire before the year 2032, just 8 years from now. Secondly, they could co-fire coal with natural gas before the year 2030, just less than six years away, and then retire before the year 2039. So it would extend the life if they co-fired with the natural gas. Or option three, install carbon capture and storage technology before the year 2032 and then continue to operate. Are these options feasible? Of course, the first one is just shut them down in 8 years. Let's focus on that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think we are well away from 8 years of being able to have, you know, full-scale nuclear as an option or to be able to fully rely on renewables. You know, I kind of laugh a little bit facetiously at the point that, you know, this is supposedly options. These aren't really options. These are, you know, shut down these plants. And I think, you know, I've spent a lot of my career working on policies to try and enhance and to move forward carbon capture technology. I think that is extremely promising. And I do believe that we will get there one day. Right now, it has not been proven to be economically feasible and to continue running a plant. So to your point, the EPA is basically saying they're basically just saying shut down your coal plants.
We are going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back.
Hi, Richard Nelson here. There's got to be a better way to engage politics. That's why I wrote a new book focusing on how Christians can lead the way. It's called Christianity and Politics, a memoir of spiritual formation and field guide for Christians in the public arena. This is a refreshing perspective on how believers can engage the political realm, and it's available for pre-order on Amazon today. So please check it out. I think you're going to find it helpful. If you're just tuning in, you are joining me, Richard Nelson, and Caitlin Bunning of Dependable Power First Kentucky, and we are talking about energy reliability in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. Caitlin, what happens if these coal-fired plants fail to shut down or retire before the year 2032 and they can't meet the other ones? Because there are real costs involved with carbon capture technology or with co-firing. And what are there penalties if they don't?
There are major penalties. And I think really the penalties I'd like to focus on most of all is, at the end of the day, these utilities still have to deliver for their customers. You know, most of us don't think much about when we go to turn on our light switch, where that power comes from or how it gets there. We just want it there, right? And we want it to be affordable. And so, you know, these utilities are going to have to scramble to try and backfill that loss of capacity. So, yes, there are major penalties, you know, but the options, again, are limited. We have one member, for instance, who estimates that it would cost them close to $10 billion just to bring one plant into compliance under this regulation, one coal plant. So obviously, they'll be forced to close it. And that is one of their plants that they rely most heavily on to deliver for their customers. So, you know, it's a real, real issue and something that I think every Kentuckian needs to be aware of. This isn't just something that the utilities have to figure out. I think it's something that the average citizen needs to learn about. And we all need to start standing up for ourselves, because at the end of the day, there's only so much these utilities can do to shield the customer. And at the end of the day, it's going to impact the customer.
Caitlin, we often see stories, particularly in Western states, where they have pushed out the coal-fired plants. They're relying more on renewables. But when there's a large demand in peak summer months, or if there's a natural disaster, residents have faced blackouts for extended periods of time. But I want to bring it here to Kentucky. We saw rolling blackouts after a winter storm, Winter Storm Elliott, just a few years ago. It hit Kentucky over Christmas. What caused the rolling blackouts? What led to that? Because we're not used to that happening here, are we?
No, I mean, it was, I think, a real eye-opening experience, and frankly was one of the leading reasons that Dependable Power First Kentucky launched. I think it really resonated with folks that this isn't just a problem in California or Texas. This is a problem here. And increasingly, we can't just look at our state in a vacuum either. What other states do impacts us. We're all interconnected through the energy grid. And so the choices that other states make does have a ripple effect on us. But to your point about Winter Storm Elliott, I think what happened was there was a severe under-projection of what the winter months were going to be like. We reached record low temperatures. So yes, it was sort of what people would say once in a generation type storm. But still, I mean, the fact that we couldn't rebound more quickly than we did as a state was really alarming. You know, in situations like that, I often think about the single mom who, you know, if she loses power for a couple of days, she has to throw out all the food in the refrigerator, and she can't just afford to go buy new food the next day. This is a real impact on people. What happened in the storm was there was an over-reliance on natural gas, and there was an inability to get the fuel to the stations to generate more electricity. You had pipeline failures, you had some transmission challenges. And at the end of the day, when you have ice covered roads and you're relying on delivering it via, you know, truck and vehicle, that creates a significant challenge, especially over a Christmas holiday. So we did see a lot of coal generation stepping up nationwide to try and backfill as best as they could. But ultimately, there's only so many coal plants left.
So this boils down to one of the big areas of concern is storage. Solar and wind cannot be stored. You mentioned earlier that we don't have the battery technology to store that power so that it's ready on demand if there is a natural disaster or a crisis that happens. The other issue is with natural gas. That can't be stored easily either.
Correct.
It has to come through a pipeline. And you said that during Winter Storm Elliott, there was a problem with the valves, or what happened?
Yes, there was a pipeline malfunction, ultimately, is what it boiled down to. There are a lot of things that went through it, and we have some really extensive studies looking into Winter Storm Elliott, and the grid operators have been looking into it. So I think there was a lot of complicating factors. But ultimately, yes, there was a pipeline malfunction. The valves, I believe, were freezing on and off, and there was just a challenge with getting the natural gas to the plants themselves. What I will say is, you know, coal isn't perfect either, which is why we rely on an all of the above strategy, but you can store coal on site, right? And you can't, you know, it's not always easy to ramp up a plant immediately, but you have that fuel on site and you have reserves. And so it's important to have both.
So, and that's the point I was getting to. So with coal at a coal-fired plant, typically they'll have 30 to 60 days of reserve right there. So
Correct.
If there's a need, you can put more coal into the coal-fired burners and generate electricity as needed. Whereas the other two sources of electricity, you don't have the storage capability.
Correct. It's not always readily available. And I think, you know, the batteries for renewables, we make advancements on those all the time. And I think that we'll continue to make those advancements, but we're not there yet.
Now, the state legislature has addressed prematurely closing down coal-fired plants. Senate Bill 4 was an effort a couple years ago. And it said that before a coal-fired plant is shut down, there must be a study and analysis of long-term effects. And then there was Senate Bill 349, which set up the EPIC Commission, which required them to, among other things, to develop an energy policy for the Commonwealth of Kentucky. Now, there's an interesting overlap, or interesting dynamic here, in that you have these energy, often cooperatives, that are supplying energy, the electricity, to residents of Kentucky. So there's a public aspect there. And we have a public service commission that overlooks energy production and energy policy. Yet these specific cooperatives across the state, and I think of like KU, Big Rivers over in far west Kentucky, LG&E, have these cooperatives that are servicing their customers, and yet there's no long-term energy policy that they have or that the state has. And Senate Bill 349 is requiring that. Is this something that would have helped us if we had this policy in place a few years ago, or this requirement? Hey, if you're going to close down a plant, this is one of the provisions. If you as an energy cooperative, correct me if I'm wrong, close down a coal-fired plant, tell us how that will impact times of, let's say, a weather crisis, or times when there's a high demand for electricity. Apparently, they've not done that before. Would that have prevented maybe the rolling blackouts during Winter Storm Elliott?
I will say, in defense of the utilities, they do actually project sometimes 20, 30 years in advance, because they have to, you know, make important decisions about, do they update current plants? How much generation do they project? But I will say that we're sort of in unprecedented times a little bit, in the fact that, you know, from the federal level, it's a moving target, and these regulations come and they hit almost immediately. And then on top of that, we've seen a resurgence in manufacturing and data centers, in AI facilities, and those are EV facilities. We have, you know, that's been a bright spot in the Commonwealth. We've seen a increase in EV manufacturing. Those are all highly energy intensive. So for the first time in a long time, we're seeing demand increase. So you have all of these factors that are kind of hitting at once, and the utilities are having to sort of scramble to react to those. So, you know, they do those projections. But what I'll say about Senate Bill 4 and Senate Bill 349 is that we're lucky here in Kentucky that we do have a General Assembly that is thinking keenly about this issue. They see the risks that are coming down the pipeline, so to speak, and they're trying to do what they can from a state perspective to protect the citizens of the Commonwealth, but back to your original point, to also protect Kentucky's competitive edge, or historical competitive edge. And so I think, you know, while yes, this is sort of under the mandate of what utilities can and should have been doing all along, it sort of reinforces that this is a problem. Something seems to be falling short, and we want to make everybody sort of pause before these decisions take place and really think about what the impact is on reliability, and to not think about it from a vacuum. So, you know, you're thinking about your 2030 year plan projections and what that means for your customer base, but that also can impact other utilities and other states who go to the grid and rely on, you know, sort of that backup policy, if you will, for when there are shortfalls. That's why we have the grid infrastructure the way that it's currently in place. I think both of those bills really show that the General Assembly is keenly aware of these challenges, and they really are trying to do what they can to put an emphasis on the need for reliability.
I'm going to go back to projected future needs. You mentioned the EV production coming online. There's a major plant that's being built over in Hardin County, not far from here. There's going to be increased demand of reliable energy production for the production of the batteries there. AI is on the verge of becoming a major new technology that people are going to rely on, and that's going to require more energy. crypto mining. This has been in the news. You have these crypto mining plants that use all kinds of incredible energy, and I don't understand any of it, but I know it's a thing. So we have these new things on the horizon that will, in electric vehicles, which are using the batteries that are being produced at the plant in Hardin County. So we have these things on the horizon that will require more energy. Here's something that, so utilities across the country are upwardly adjusting their forecasts. A number of them are announcing updates that nearly double their projection of electricity demand growth by the year 2028. That's just 4 years from now. Many of these utilities are doubling their projections. Is Kentucky ready to meet that challenge?
You know, I think time will tell. I think right now we're concerned. And I think what we really want to focus on too is you don't want to retire plants prematurely, because once you do, it's nearly impossible to get them back online, particularly a coal plant, which is why I think these regulations are so concerning. Once these coal plants are gone, it's nearly impossible from a regulatory standpoint and from an economical standpoint to bring them back online. And so we really want to say, let's hit the pause button. All these things are hitting at once. And have we really taken the time to think about the long-term ramifications? And if we're just now starting to see this resurgence, these are just guesstimates. It could be way above that. It could be below it. Who knows? But you know, some of these things have really been bright spots for potential investment in the Commonwealth. And we need to take that seriously and really think about whether or not we have the ability to pivot and increase our capacity.
We are going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back.
Have you ever wondered why America is the most prosperous nation in history? We've certainly been blessed, but we take the conditions for prosperity for granted. That's why CPC is hosting the Toward a Better Bluegrass Conference. We've invited some of the top thinkers and leaders to speak about the sources of our economic strength. Biblical principles, America's founding framework, and individual capacity are a few issues that we'll be addressing. So please join us on October the 18th in Lexington. And for more information, go to our website, commonwealthpolicycenter.org. And we look forward to seeing you there.
If you're just tuning in, I'm Richard Nelson here with Caitlin Bunning, and we are talking about reliable and dependable energy in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. Caitlin, the North American Reliability Corporation, NERC for short, and grid operators, which includes parts of Kentucky, have publicly warned the administration. They're talking about the federal Biden administration and federal agencies that grid reliability is at risk because of coal retirements. Is anybody listening in the Biden administration or at the EPA?
That's a good question. You know, I ask that question often just in frustration. You know, I do think you'll see in some states they have either paused or reversed plans for plant retirements. I think even in Kentucky, that's been part of the discussion. And frankly, I think and I hope that we'll see more of that. I don't know that the administration's listening. You have a multi-state lawsuit led by our attorney general here in Kentucky, General Coleman, who's been very fierce in this battle. So, you know, you do have states that are trying to stand up for themselves and make the federal government listen. We've been through this battle before, and back in the Obama administration, basically, the exact same regulation was put in place, and you saw the Supreme Court take an unprecedented stay where they stopped the regulation from being enforced just at the district level before letting it play out through the entire court process. And then here we are again with the Biden administration trying to accomplish the same goals and just sort of taking that court decision and saying, well, we're going to do it anyways. So often it is frustrating to feel like the federal government is not listening to the alarm bells. And I should say, these regulatory bodies, the grid operators and NERC, they're unbiased sort of third-party observers. They look at the markets. They know this industry through and through. They are the premier experts, if you will. And so for them to be looking at this and to continually be ringing the alarm bells and to feel like no one's listening is very, very concerning. And all the more reason why I think we at Dependable Power First feel even more emboldened to try and stand up for Kentuckians and try and add the human voice to that concern.
You mentioned Attorney General Russell Coleman, who had some strong words about these federal policies that jeopardize reliable and dependable power in the future here. And this is what he said in a statement not long ago. Hope is not a strategy, especially when our jobs and our families are on the line. Simply hoping that unproven technologies will be able to fuel Kentucky's economy is irresponsible. The EPA's crackdown would demand Kentucky's coal-fired plants take aggressive steps to curb emissions or force them to close. What specifically is Attorney General Coleman doing regarding these EPA mandates?
So he's signed on to a multi-state lawsuit to try and overturn the regulation. And I'm so grateful to the work that he and his office have been doing on this front. He really is going to fight for Kentuckians and doing whatever he can through his power as Attorney General to overturn and to stop these regulations from becoming reality.
Caitlin, do you expect any legislation in the upcoming General Assembly session in 2025 that would address Kentucky's future power needs and also energy reliability? Is there anything that's being talked about right now?
You know, that's a great question. As you mentioned, the last two sessions, we've seen a lot of activity in this space. And with, looking at this new commission that was set up through Senate Bill 349, I imagine the legislature will be watching that very closely. And we very well could see something pop up. We're watching the interim very closely to see what the General Assembly is focused on and what sort of questions they're asking. And we stand ready to help with those efforts however we can. As far as specific legislation, the way that we approach these things is if there's policy that's out there or if there are ideas being kicked around, we look at it through the lens of, is this going to help or hurt reliability? Is this going to help or hurt the prices of electricity? And, we sort of offer our expertise and our thoughts through that lens.
Caitlin Bunning, Dependable Power First Kentucky. How can people get a hold of you?
Visit our website, Dependable Power First Kentucky. We are making the rounds throughout the Commonwealth. We want to hear from groups. We're trying to build out our coalition. And so go to our website, reach out to me directly. We really need more people to join our charge, and we welcome any and all opinions.
Thank you so much, Caitlin. Keep
Thank
up the good work.
Thank you for having me.
If you've enjoyed this program, then please tell your friends about us. Also, it would greatly help if you'd go to your favorite podcast platform and give us a rating. This would be a great help. Thank you.